Mishnah Zavar Zorah, Perek Hemishnah Yud Beis, until Mishnah Zavar Zorah, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Gimel. The final Mishnah of Mishnah Zavar Zorah talks about purifying utensils which have been used for cooking by a non-Jew, or a non-Jew has used it when he's eating, and how one is supposed to go about purifying that utensil before he can use it for kosher food. The Torah in Parshas Matos, when it talks about when the Jews took spoils from the war against Midian, and the Torah describes that in order to purify those utensils, to permit them for eating, for using them for cooking purposes and eating purposes, the main rule is that the same way as the non-kosher food got absorbed into that utensil, that is the way that you need to sort of get it out. This is known as kaboloi kach poltoi. In the same way as it got absorbed into the material of which the utensil is made out of, you need to do the same process in order to get it out of there. As the Mishnah will now explain, one who buys a utensil which is used for food purposes from a non-Jew, and he's used it before, which we're going to translate to mean that something for which it is sufficient to purify it just by dipping it into a mikveh, into cold water. So you should dip it into a mikveh of cold water, and that's all he needs to do. Lahagil, if it's a utensil such as a pot which is used for boiling things, so the non-kosher food which would have been inside the boiling water in the pot, for example, would have caused that non-kosher food to be absorbed into the pot via the heat of the boiling water. So the way to get rid of that is yagil. You need to dip that pot into other boiling hot water once you've totally cleaned the pot, and that would make that utensil, that pot, fit for using for kosher food. Lelabim ba'or, if it's a utensil which cooks food, and the food would have got absorbed into it with fire, yelabim ba'or, he should direct a boiling hot fire onto that utensil, once again, once you've cleaned the utensil, until it's so hot that it's becoming red, and there are sparks coming out of it, and then it would be fit for use. And the Mishnah gives an example, hashfud, a spit, which you would put meat on and roast on a fire, the hot askalah. This is some sort of metal netting on which they would place meat on top of a fire, some sort of barbecue. The lablon bo'ur, you should apply an extremely hot fire onto it in order to kasher it. And the Mishnah gives a final example, a sakin, a knife which one bought from a non-Jew, and it's been used for non-kosher foods before. Shofar, which literally means you should rub it. And the Gemara explains that the way to make it fit for use is by stabbing it into the ground at ten different places. And there are other ways as well, which you can rub it, where you can polish the knife very well. Once you've done that, v'hitahira, it would be pure, it would be fit for using for kosher food. And according to many, this is only sufficient if you're going to use it for cold foods. But if you want to use it for something hot, then you would need to apply a fire to the knife once again until you see it becoming red hot, and that would make it fit for use even for hot items. It should be noted that once you've done any of these things, before using it, you would still need to dip it into a mikveh. So really, in the process of making these utensils fit for kosher food, there are two stages. One is based on the rule of kaboloi kach poltoi, by taking out any of the leftover substances which have been absorbed into that utensil, and doing that in the same way as they got in, as the Mishnah has explained. And after that, although the Mishnah doesn't mention it, you need to dip it into a mikveh. Solik ma'asech zavid zara mazal tov. We begin Be'ezus Hashem, Maseches Ovois, also known as Pirkei Ovois, and this Masechta is quite unlike any of the other Masechtas in Shas. No actual laws are discussed in this Masechta. It's rather focused much more on building one's character, and effectively this is a book of the Hashkofa of Chazal. Chazal's outlook on life, on being a full, complete person. Many of the Mishnayos discuss different middos, different character traits, which one is supposed to try to develop. And as well as that, interestingly, there are many Mishnayos which discuss the importance and greatness of learning Torah, because it goes without saying that to be a complete person, fulfilling one's maximum potential as a Jew, that's impossible to do without learning Torah. Now, this Masechta originally contained within it 5 parakim, although each parak contains quite a lot more Mishnayos than a regular parak throughout the rest of Shas, although each Mishnah is quite a bit shorter than the average Mishnah's length. Now that having been said, a 6th perek was later on added. Strictly speaking, it's not part of the actual Mishnah, but it was added, and that 6th perek is pretty much totally focused on the greatness of Talmud Torah. It should be noted, by the way, that although there's no Gemara on this Masechta, there is a compilation of different brises, various sayings of Tanaim, called Ovos to Rabbi Nosson, which is based on Pirkei Ovos and expounds many of the various lessons which the Mishnayos teach us at far greater length. Now, regarding the name of this Masechta, Ovos, which literally means fathers, there are many different interpretations for why exactly the Masechta is called Ovos. And as we're going to see, really every single Mishnah, every single line in this Masechta, numerous explanations and interpretations have been written about every part of this Masechta. But as it may, one explanation for why this Masechta is called Ovos is because, as we're going to see, the entire first parak of the Masechta, as well as more subtly the later Prakim as well, record the passing down of the Torah since Moshe Rabbeinu, when he received the Torah at Har Sinai, going down from generation to generation, through the different Talmid Chachomim, the leaders of each generation, until the times of the Tanoim, when the Mishnah was actually written. And these leaders of each generation are really considered our fathers. Perhaps not in a physical sense, but certainly in a spiritual sense. Everything that we have today, all of the Torah, has been passed down from them. One of the ideas presented in this Masechta is the incredible idea of the Masorah, the tradition and the passing down of the Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai for all of these thousands of years, the same Torah not having been changed at all, and part of the message being that all of these lessons about one's character trait and how to be a decent and complete human being is no less an intrinsic and important part of that incredible tradition of the Torah which we have going back since Har Sinai. Now, one more note of introduction before we begin the Masechta, and the truth is, this actually leads us perfectly into the first Mishnah. Many of the Mefarshim ask about the location of this Masechta in Seder Nezikin. Shas Mishnayos is, of course, split into six different sections, six different Sidorim, and Seder Nezikin is all about damages, the courts, how to judge each case, stealing, property laws. It's to do with these court laws. What has Pirkei Ovos got to do with that? Why is it placed towards the end of Seder Nezikin? So one answer which the Rambam gives is that it's to show us that these dayonim, these judges, which we've been discussing throughout the whole Seder Nezikin, who are in charge of all of the laws, they're not just wise men who can work out what the law should be and give rulings in each situation, but rather they're coming from a place of having received all of these laws and the Torah from generation to generation, going back to Moshe from Har Sinai, when Hashem gave us the Torah. And so since one of the main ideas given over, especially in the first perek, is this idea of how the Torah was passed down from generation to generation. Because of that, this Masechta is found in Seder Nezikin, which talks about the leaders of each generation and how they are supposed to fulfill their role. So we begin the Masechta. Moshe kibbutz Torah miSinai. Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah from Hashem at Har Sinai, both the Torah shebichsav, the written Torah, as well as the Torah shebal peh, which he received, and it wasn't written down, but it was passed down from generation until generation, orally, until much of it had to be written down at the time of the Mishnah, and more was written down in the Gemara. But be as it may, Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah b'chsav and the Torah b'al peh at Har Sinai, u'mosar al Yeshua, and he gave over that Torah, that which he knew, to Yeshua, who was of course his prime Talmud. V'Yeshua l'zakenim, Yeshua gave over the Torah. He passed it down to the Zakenim, the elders who led the Jewish people, since after Yeshua died, during the period of the Shoftim, that takes us all the way until the time of Eliyahu Kohen, who's one of the last Zakenim. It was Zakenim and Neviim, the elders and the Shoftim gave over the Torah to the prophets, from the time of Shmuel Hanavi until the last of the Neviim, around at the time of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. And then in Neviim, the prophets, Msaruhov, gave over all of the Torah la'anshei Knesset HaGedola to the members of the Knesset HaGedola, the last of the Neviim, such as Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi. They were part of the original anshei Knesset HaGedola, a group of the leading Talmidei Chachamim of the generation, led by Ezra HaSofer. And now the Mishnah begins. We've reached the first teaching of the Masechta. Heim Omru Shlosh Dvarim, they, the members of the Knesset HaGedola, said three things. And we're going to see this phrase, or a similar phrase, pretty much throughout the rest of the Masechta, that they used to say three things, or Hu Hoya Omer, he would say the following thing, the following teaching. So obviously that doesn't mean that they only said three things. They obviously taught the Jewish people many, many things. The point is, though, that these things which the Mishnah records in their name was repeated by them very often, in order that they could drill this message into the Jewish people. Alternatively, huhoyo oimer doesn't necessarily refer to something which that particular Tana would say very often, but it refers to the teaching which they sort of contributed the most and had the biggest impact on Klal Yisrael. And a third, more novel interpretation of this term, huhoyo oimer, he would say, is that it doesn't mean that he would physically say those words, but rather who, he as a person, him, his entire being, Hoya Omer, would say this teaching, would exhibit and present these messages to everybody by their very example of how they lived. Teaching by example can, of course, be one of the most effective ways of teaching and showing others how to behave. So that is quite a beautiful explanation of what that term, hu hoya omer, he would say, means. Be as it may, the Mishnah says, heimom shloisha dvarim, they, the Anshei Kenes HaGdoila, said three things. Number one, hevem sun badin, you should be patient in judgment. The simplest explanation of this is referring to judges who need to make decisions. They shouldn't jump to conclusions very quickly. Rather, they should be patient, measure out all of the sides of the argument before they come to a balanced conclusion. But it also refers to every individual. They shouldn't be quick to judge somebody. Their decisions should be thought out properly. All right, number two, v'hamidu talmid maharbe, you should set up many students. Don't just accept the most elite, intelligent people to be your students, but try to teach as many people, whoever wants to learn anything, put the effort into teaching them. And thirdly, make a fence for the Torah. If you see that you are in danger of transgressing a particular Avera, so you should set yourself boundaries so that you don't come near to that Avera. And once again, this is referring on the one hand to the leaders of every generation, that when they see fit, they should decree certain laws in order to prevent people from violating Averas. And also on an individual level, placing blockages and filters to prevent one from even getting close to the Avera, that is all part of this teaching of the Mishnah. So just to summarize that Mishnah, Moshe received the Torah from Har Sinai, gave it over to Yeshua, who gave it over to the Zakenim, who gave it over to the Nevi'im, the prophets, and they gave it to the Anshei Kenes HaGdoila, and the Anshei Kenes HaGdoila said three main teachings. One is that you should be patient when you make decisions. Number two is you should teach many different students. And number three is that you should set up the necessary boundaries to prevent you from doing any Averas. Mishnah Beis, Shimon HaTzadik, Hoi Mishori Kenes HaGdoila. Shimon HaTzadik, the righteous one, was among the remnants of the Kenes HaGdoila, one of the last members. And Hu Hoi Oimer, he would say. Again, simply that just means that he would say this very often. Alternatively, like we explained, his entire being and life would give over this message to everybody else. Al Shaloisha Dvarim Ha'olam Omeid. The world stands upon three things, very famously, Ala Torah, upon Torah, avala Aveda, and upon the service of Hashem, which refers to Karbonos, or when there's no Beis HaMikdash, this refers to Tefillah, praying to Hashem, which is the replacement of the Karbonos, v'agamilos chasadim, and upon being kind to one another. Each of these three things is learnt from Psukim, which teach that were it not for these three things, the world would not be able to exist. For example, the Pasuk says, Olam chesed yibaneh, the world is built upon kindness. And there are Psukim regarding all three of these things. Now, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky points out a very beautiful insight into the significance of the number three in this Mishnah. If you imagine you've got a table of four legs. A regular table has got four legs, and somehow one of the legs gets taken off. Unless you lean on the table where the leg is not there anymore, the table can still just about stand on the three remaining legs. It's true it might stand better and be more steady with all four legs, but without leaning on the table can still stand with the three remaining legs. Now imagine you have a table which only has three legs. They're spread out equally from each other. Now if you take away one of those legs, what's going to happen to the table? It's going to fall down. Says of Yaakov Kamenetsky, the world stands on three things, on three pillars, and that's to tell us that the second that you haven't got one of those, the world can no longer exist. And like all of Pirkei Avos, this is talking not only about the larger world out there, but also the individual world of each individual person. Every step, every level which a person progresses in his Torah, for example, together with that, he needs to be growing in his davening and in his kindness, in his midas, and in the same way goes the other way around. Let's say somebody who's becoming a much kinder person, starting to think much more about others. The more he grows in that area, the more he needs to be growing in the other two areas as well. All of these three things are entirely vital for the world and for the individual, and none of them can be missing. Mishnah Gimel, Antignos ish Soichai. Antignos, the man who lived in and led the people of Soichai. That's the name of a place. Kibbol Mishimin HaTzadik. He received his Torah. He was the student of Shimon HaTzadik. Hu Hoya Eimer, he would say the following teaching, and he got there before Shweki. Al Tiu Ka'avadam Shamish Mesarava Manas L'Kabul Paras. Do not be like servants who serve their master in order to receive the prize, the reward. But rather you should be like servants who are serving their master not in order to receive the reward, but because you want to honor and have a connection to the master, to Hashem. The ultimate reward and pleasure which one is going to have in Olam Haba is all due to the connection which he has made with Hashem in this world, rising above his natural instinct to search for his own pleasure, his own reward, and to reach higher, to just yearn for that love and the connection with Hashem. And now he adds another thing, and the fear of heaven, of Hashem, should be upon you. The first half of Antignus Yisroch's teaching is all about serving Hashem out of love, that desire for the connection to be closer to Hashem. But at the same time, one always needs to be careful to temper that with the right level of fear of Hashem and understanding boundaries, keeping to what one needs to do, and serving Hashem with both love and with fear to the greatest degree which one can.